In my study, the velvet curtains were green and a pale gold watermark satin covered the walls. Despite the hush, I was pleased with the room, for the overall effect was relieved by the broad wooden desk and the plain upright chair that stood under the window. I switched on the desk lamp and laid out the ream of paper I'd brought with me and my 12 pencils. They were brand new, unsharpened columns of red, just what I like to start a new project with. The last thing I took from my bag was my pencil sharpener. I screwed it like a vice to the edge of the desk and set the paper basket directly underneath. On impulse, I climbed onto the desk and reached behind the elaborate valance to the curtain pole. In a few minutes, the curtains were folded and in a cupboard. I stood in the center of the floor and surveyed the result of my work. The window was a large expanse of dark glass, and in the center of it, my ghost, darkly transparent, was staring in at me. Her world was not unlike my own, the pale outline of a desk, the other side of the glass, and farther back, a deeply buttoned armchair placed inside the circle of light cast by a standard lamp. But where my chair was red, hers was grey, and where my chair stood on an Indian rug, surrounded by light gold walls, her chair hovered spectrally in an undefined, endless plane of darkness, in which vague forms, like waves, seemed to shift and breathe. Together we began the little ritual of preparing our desks. We divided a ream of paper into smaller piles and flicked through each one to let the air in. One by one we sharpened our pencils, turning the handle and watching the long shavings curl and dangle their way to the paper bin below. When the last pencil had been shaved to a fine point, we did not put it down with the others, but kept hold of it. "There," I said to her, "ready for work." She opened her mouth, seemed to speak to me. I couldn't hear what she was saying. I have no shorthand. During the interview, I had simply jotted down lists of key words, and my hope was that if I wrote up our interviews immediately afterward, these words would be enough to jog my memory. And from that first meeting, it worked well. Glancing at my notebook from time to time, I filled the centre of my sheets of foolscap with Miss Winter's words, conjuring her image in my mind, hearing her voice, seeing her mannerisms. Soon I was hardly aware of my notebook, but was taking dictation from the Miss Winter in my head. I left wide margins. In the left-hand one I noted any mannerisms, expressions and gestures that seemed to add something to her meaning. The right-hand margin I left blank. Later, rereading, it is here that I would enter my own thoughts, comments, questions. I must have worked for hours. I emerged to make myself a cup of cocoa, but it was time suspended and did not disturb the flow of my recreation. I returned to my work and picked up the thread as though there had been no interruption. "One gets so used to one's own horrors, one forgets how they must seem to other people," I wrote at last in the middle column, and in the left I added a note describing the way she closed the fingers of her good hand over the closed fist of the damaged one. I drew a double line under the last line of script and stretched. In the window, the other me stretched as well. She took the pencils whose points she had worn and sharpened them one by one. She was mid-yawn when something began to happen to her face. First it was a sudden blurring in the centre of her forehead, like a blister. Another mark appeared on her cheek, then beneath her eye, on her nose, on her lips. Each new blemish was accompanied by a dull thud, a percussion that grew faster and faster. In a few seconds her entire face, it seemed, had decomposed. But it was not the work of death. It was only rain, the long-awaited rain. I opened the window, let my hand be drenched, then wiped the water over my eyes and face. I shivered. Time for bed. I left the window ajar so that I could listen to the rain as it continued to fall with an even muffled softness. I heard it while I was undressing, while I was reading, and while I slept. It accompanied my dreams like a poorly tuned radio left on through the night, broadcasting a fuzzy white noise beneath which are the barely audible whispers of foreign languages and snatches of unfamiliar tunes.